One of my favorite guests. We've had an interview with him before, but so much has happened both with him and on the subject that he is an expert on. Tom Wolfe is a recovering drug addict who basically was living a normal life down in San Francisco, California, when he got addicted to drugs, found himself living on the streets in the Tenderloin neighborhood of San Francisco, and if not for some important interventions, probably would be dead today. Tom has been an important truth teller down in California, but now he is also going to be involved in a very real way in trying to deal with the homeless and drug crisis right here in the Seattle area. He is the newest board member of We Heart Seattle. And we are so happy to feature Tom Wolfe today as a truth teller. Tom, welcome back to Undivided.
Hi, Randy. It's great to be back.
Yeah, well, this is our truth teller series. Thank you for being a truth teller. I know we've had you on before, but yep. We wanted to really celebrate you. You came in and you go, I want to talk shit.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, what's got your panties in a bunch today?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things going on because, look, I live in California. I live in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You guys know that. And while, you know, I always focus on homelessness and addiction and all that, there's all this craziness happening in California around the whole redistricting and
yes.
gerrymandering process. And, you know, look, I'm kind of a middle of the road guy, and I'm just really pissed off about that because that violates our state constitution. Mm-hmm. And they're actually going to pass a bill to change the constitution, and nobody can stop them from doing it except for voters. So I just want voters to think long and hard about that, because that kind of bullying from mm-hmm. our elected officials is not how representative government is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling strongly about that, because Democrats all this time, all last year, were talking about saving democracy. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember that Kamala Harris was appointed without anyone voting for her. I don't care what people say on the left about that. Nobody voted for mm-hmm. that lady. And there's a reason why Trump is president, and it's time that Democrats take a hard, long look in the mirror about that.
Yeah, and any time they try to justify something under the umbrella of, oh, it's an emergency, and that's what they're saying about the redistricting.
Yep.
You know, well, today it's an emergency. Tomorrow it's because we let you get away with it during an emergency, and they're just doing this stuff all the time. So I want to talk about California. I want to talk about what the heck is going on with Gavin Newsom. I have to, like, block him on X, I think, because he's gotten so annoying. But for people who aren't familiar with you, give the kind of Cliff Notes version of how you became a truth teller.
Well, I'm a recovery advocate. And what that means is that at one point in my life, a little over 7 years ago, I was homeless on the streets mm-hmm. of San Francisco, addicted to heroin and fentanyl. And after many trips to jail, I finally had the opportunity to go to drug treatment, got clean after spending 6 months in a treatment program. And then I started talking about my experience on Twitter, and it garnered international attention. And now I've built a national platform advocating for changes to our policy now. That's how my advocacy's kind of evolved and pivoted. It's about changing policy, changing the direction of the money that's going into the nonprofit mm-hmm. industrial complex and the homeless industrial complex, to root corruption out of that complex, because it is rife with corruption and misappropriation of funds. And to actually put pressure on politicians in places like Seattle and Portland and Denver and San Francisco, where we have succeeded, by the way. In San Francisco, we now have a moderate mayor, a moderate city council board of supervisors. Mm-hmm. We have a proactive district attorney after we recalled Chesa Boudin a couple years ago, yeah. who actually declared a war on fentanyl in our town. And while it's not perfect and there's still a long way to go, we have definitely turned a corner, and it's time to take that message out to these other cities to let them know that they need to take a step away from harm reduction and from this just unbridled funding of nonprofit organizations that, you know, at the end of the day, hardly any of that money is actually getting down to the people that are supposed to help it.
Yes.
And there's proof. There's now evidence behind that showing all the grift and the corruption and the investigations. Mm-hmm. There's 13 nonprofits in San Francisco right now under investigation mm-hmm. for misappropriation of funds or straight up corruption that are supposedly supposed to be spending that money on the most vulnerable, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Same thing's happening in Seattle. Same thing's happening in Denver and L.A. There's $2.2 billion missing from the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, and nobody can account for it. And there's still 47,000 homeless people in the city of Los Angeles. So, you know, this might be the biggest kind of grift. out of all these different things that are happening in this country, it's the issue around homelessness. It might be the biggest grift of them all. And, you know, my advocacy, while I've always pushed for more recovery, and I truly believe in that, it's time to expose that.
Yeah.
It's time to right the ship. And it's time to pivot away from this radical do all the drugs you want stuff and focus on recovery. And that's who I am. But my advocacy work is now spilled into other things, too. I touch on some political issues and other issues that I think help just contribute to that madness. And it all has to do with policy and the people that we elect in office.
Well, no, it's all the fruit of a poisonous tree, right?
That's right.
And these progressive policies that have taken over the West Coast, whether you're going to talk about crime and police defunding or all of this, it's this driven by a radical ideology as opposed to what works.
That's right.
But, you know, you talk about this homelessness grift and the homelessness industrial complex. It is not only probably the largest grift in government, it's the saddest. When you think about it, you've got these people who've convinced the world that they're really the ones who are overflowing with empathy, mm-hmm. and they're just letting people die on the streets while they know people are pocketing cash.
Well, you know, that's all part of the social justice framework is what I call it, right? It's all about body autonomy and choice. And, you know, if you, you know, I have to respect your civil liberties up unto death, even unto death, I have to respect your civil liberties. So if you want to live on the street and shoot dope all day long until you die, that's your right, despite all of the chaos and all of the harms to the community that causes. Kids have to walk by people shooting dope on the street. That's unacceptable behavior. Yep. That is a violation of our social contract. And, you know, our elected leaders, Seattle's a great example, King County, they just have, I mean, it's out of control. Like, they have lost control. They're overwhelmed. They keep thinking the answer is more money, and it's not. It's a change in philosophy. It's a change in ideology. But as soon as you do that, you break from that social justice construct, and now you're the enemy.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. So speaking of that, you have a new position amongst the many titles you now hold, and you're going to start working with We Heart Seattle. What are you going to be doing with them, and
well,
how did that come about?
I'm joining their board of directors as their vice chair.
Awesome.
I've had a relationship with Andrea now for about 4 years.
Yep.
The work that she's doing up here is amazing. They have the most effective model that I've seen just about anywhere, right? We've developed our own recovery system of care in San Francisco, which is super effective. But as far as actually making inroads into homeless encampments and the homeless community, quote unquote, to build relationships and get people off the street, that model of going in, picking up trash, getting the community that's living there in tents involved in cleaning up their little tiny encampment and getting people connected to services, it works. The efficacy rate is really high. And it's amazing to me that the city of Seattle and that King County are really not interested in engaging in that type of model, primarily because of politics, which is really unfortunate, because homelessness really shouldn't be a political issue. It should be a bipartisan thing at the very least, but it's really a humanitarian crisis. And, you know, it affects everyone, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, it affects everybody. So we all have a stake in it. So we should, if I was the mayor of Seattle, I would be engaging every single resource that's out there to help mitigate this crisis before he loses his job, and I think he's going to lose his job.
He very well may.
And before your city slips further into kind of the abyss of just, you know, unmanageable homelessness combined with unmanageable drug addiction and massive overdose deaths.
Yeah, the you know, you're going to have to make decisions like this when you're on the board of We Heart Seattle now. I mean, there's this conversation, I think frustration that's valid, that, you know, they're giving millions of dollars to these entities that have nothing to show for it. And then when it's Andrea Suarez and We Heart Seattle and they're doing awesome things with a fraction of the money, it's like, oh, they're evil, you know? But is We Heart Seattle better outside the system? Would it be a mistake to plug it into the complex?
Well, it's not whether it needs to be inside or outside the system. You have to change the policies within the system to allow an organization like We Heart to function as it should.
Yep.
Let's put it that way.
Full potential.
Right. Full potential. So for example, in San Francisco, we, you know, elected a new mayor. He's a moderate. We had been talking to him for like a year before he got elected, me and other recovery advocates in San Francisco. We have a whole recovery coalition down there about what it would take for to actually see real change in San Francisco. And one of the things would be to support clean and sober options, like recovery housing, transitional housing for people coming out of drug treatment where they can live in a drug-free environment. So they're not going back to live in one of the SROs downtown where there's a 90% relapse rate. Mm-hmm. San Francisco is about to open its first ever clean and sober shelter. Okay, that's unheard of.
First ever? That's
first
crazy.
Ever that the city's paying for.
Okay, gotcha.
So the city's paying for it, which is amazing, right? Yep. So that's like a huge step back from kind of this permissive harm reduction ideology. It's a step back from housing first. Mm-hmm. And I understand that housing first is the state requirement in California. It's actually the state law.
Yeah.
But I also have been talking to HUD at the federal level since the new administration took over. I have a couple of friends at HUD. And I've had them come out to San Francisco to see my stakeholders already and to see the work that we're doing down there. And I promise you, changes are coming. Next year, if you want to get a grant from HUD to operate your housing, you need to submit a plan for treatment and recovery for people. That is the way. Yeah. Involving faith-based organizations, that is the way. You're bringing everybody into that space now to try to mitigate what I think is really the crisis of our generation, which is homelessness and the drug problem. I mean, look. We've got 40 million Americans addicted to drugs right now. You've got another, after that, you have another 10% of Americans that are addicted to alcohol. So alcoholism, right? Yeah. So we're talking like 50, 60 million people in our country that are addicted to a substance.
Yeah.
And we have a million homeless people to boot. It's like, man, in our urban centers are crumbling under the weight of all of that. And we must respond.
Yeah. And even though San Francisco seems to be this sort of on the upswing, right? I mean, how long does it take to recover from what that crisis has done to not only that city realistically, economically, from a tourism perspective, but also the city's reputation?
Yeah, well, you have to understand, like, we kind of hit rock bottom.
Right? Oh,
so
yeah.
There's nowhere to go from there but up, right? And so, yes, we are on the upswing, but we didn't get to where we were. We didn't get to rock bottom overnight. It took 10 years of bad policy, terrible state policy, terrible leadership. Like, we had multiple Democratic socialists on our board of supervisors, uber progressive mayors. You know, our previous mayor, while she was a decent human being, she ran her administration like she was in the mafia. It wasn't good. Like, you had to kiss the ring and everything was transactional to get something done, right? As opposed to our new mayor, who's very open, he's very active on social media. He comes out, meets with people on the street, builds good rapport and builds goodwill. And trust me, that goes a long way. And I just don't see that happening in some of these other cities. Right now, everything is like a game of keep away with the progressive left right now. It's like they have all the funding. They have all the policy behind them. They've got this ideology and they're literally playing keep away from everybody else. And nobody else can come and play in this big giant swimming pool of money except for the people that we deem to be worthy. It's like a litmus test, and I'm telling you that is going to fail over time.
Yeah, and it seems like you like the new mayor, at least comparatively speaking. He said something that really pissed me off, though, and maybe there's more context than I know. I'm sure you know what I'm about to say, but J.J. Smith, who does his stuff, you know, and we've had him on the show, and he's like the Jonathan Cho of San Francisco, you know? He's just showing the raw, and his brother died out there in the Tenderloin.
Sure did.
So he has a personal, vendetta against, you know, trying to make this different. And you've got the mayor saying, hey, JJ, you know, when you show these videos and post them, it just hurts the city.
This is what families have to go through when they walk through there.
Wait, where are we talking about? On 6th Street or where?
This 16th.
16th. You don't have to tell me. I'm there every day.
I know. You see what the mother has to go through? They got to cover their children up to go through there.
What do you think I'm doing, JJ?
Are you cleaning it up? I know you is. It takes time, though, but the
Let
people...
Let me just say one thing about you doing the videos and push them out. It's also, you can tell me I'm doing it, but
you're
also
doing it. I know you are.
Economy.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, we've got other people on Twitter who've been hating on our city for a long time. I know you love it. I see it every day.
Okay.
You'll need to show me.
All right.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. All right, you too.
To me, that's, I don't want to see any evil, you know? And so that bothered me quite a bit.
Yeah, well, it should bother you. I mean, it was a misstep. So first of all, JJ is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Like, we're buddies.
I like him.
Like, you know, I see him out in the Tenderloin. We stop and chit-chat. I've been in his little shop over there. Mm-hmm. And I think that the videos that he's doing are incredibly important
to
help tell a story. And it helps people like me who pivoted away from doing those videos to focusing more on policy and getting better leaders in office that will follow, that are willing to change their ideology and their political views on this issue. I think the mayor, it's just hard. Like, you know, he's coming in and he's all about goodwill and, hey, things are going to get better and all that. And of course, you know, like I said, he wants to build that goodwill. And then here comes JJ in with the reality.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, well, this guy's dying over here. This guy's dying over here. And yeah, he's pissed off because he's like, you're hurting our economy. I just want, for the record, for everyone to know that the mayor came back later and apologized.
He did. Okay.
For that. So it was, you know, we're human.
Mm-hmm.
He gets frustrated. Everyone gets frustrated. JJ's videos are great. They're still shocking to some people, but I think that the more that we tell the truth, I mean, it's because of his videos and because of my advocacy work that we even have a better mayor in the first place. Yeah. It could have easily gone the other way and we could have ended up with a Democratic Socialist as our mayor.
Yeah, and the videos aren't hurting the economy.
Right.
What the videos show is hurting the economy, you know, and that's the underlying issue.
That's good to put pressure on the mayor. If he gets mad, that means he cares, right?
Yeah.
The mayor actually gives a damn. So then do something about it. And he's trying. I'll give him credit. Like, he is trying. It's just hard. You're going up against the Coalition on Homelessness, and you're going up against the radical left that are entrenched in our city. You know, we had to change the director of public health because he was a radical harm reductionist and moved to somebody that's more pragmatic. And so I look at these as little wins, as baby steps in a long marathon battle that's going to take us maybe a decade before we see real measurable, like, long-term results.
Yeah, even though it seems like you've got some pragmatists who are now in office in important positions in San Francisco, you know, these are still Democrats, right? I mean, they're still...
Of course.
And the issue that we have with our Democrats here of all stripes is anything that Donald Trump has his hand in, they want nothing to do with. And so he comes out with this executive order, and there's good stuff in there, you know? Harm reduction is hurting people. It's just, like, assisted suicide, and he wants to do away with harm reduction. He wants to do away with the fallacy of housing first, which is a failed policy. So because it's Donald Trump proposing these things, are the Democrats, even in San Francisco, just running the other way?
So what's interesting in San Francisco is, like, there's been the Democrats in office in San Francisco haven't said anything because, you know, there's people like me that speak out real loud in San Francisco and have some influence, right, on what happens there. I came out in support of Trump's executive order because everything in there are exactly the things I had been advocating for. Mm-hmm. What's sad to me is that there was no Democrat that was willing to say those things.
Right.
The other part of the irony is that it had to be Trump that had to say those things. And that's something that's a difficult pill for people to swallow in San Francisco because of all the other stuff that they're against with Trump. But this one issue, homelessness, drugs, housing, that whole suite of issues right there, that executive order was, like, perfect. And I know who helped prepare it. Yeah. Like, the people that were behind the scenes and that, I know them. I have friendships with them and relationships. They mean well. They want to do the right thing. And it's, you know, look, last year I was in Washington, D.C. I met with Biden's advisors. I think Biden was asleep, but I met with his advisors. Yeah. I was at the White House, and I got my 5 minutes of fame, you know, where I got to sit there and explain to them our model that we wanted to implement in San Francisco, and nothing happened. And here we are now. Like, for me, I don't care that there's a different president. My politics are about a means to an end, okay? So if we can reduce homelessness, get people off the street, save lives, and make our community safer. That's the big thing that everyone keeps forgetting.
Yeah.
Harms to the community, reducing harms to the community.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's Mickey Mouse that's president, right? I'm going to support that. And so here we are. Yeah, it's Donald Trump. Sorry, folks. I know you Democrats are pissed, you know. I'm not, because everything that I've been fighting for is starting to happen. And that's, I'm really, really excited about
it
that.
It just seems like some of them would rather, literally, rather let people die than work with Donald Trump.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. They would. Like, you know, fascist and all that stuff. And you hear all that craziness. And I try not to listen to the noise. I mean, I get enough of it already. And now that I'm getting involved here in Seattle, I mean, people are already coming after me on social media.
Yeah.
All the radicals up here. And I'm like, good, bring it.
Right.
That means that you're worried.
Yeah.
That means that change is coming.
Well, Andrea gets it bad here.
I know. So she needs a little help.
Yeah.
And I'm going to help her.
I love that.
Because she deserves it and she needs it, and what they're doing is the right thing. And Seattle, despite their best efforts, have failed in every measurable, every metric they failed on reducing homelessness and drug addiction and, yep. and drug overdose on our streets.
Yeah.
Every metric, despite hundreds of millions of dollars spent. Why not let someone else have a crack at this? Again, it's because they're playing keep away.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to engage the leadership here mm-hmm. to open up to the idea of trying something different. If they won't, I'm going to engage the community to donate all the money you can to We Heart Seattle and organizations like that to help them grow bigger so that they can do more and they can keep putting that pressure on the political administration, both in Seattle, King County, and even in Washington State.
Yeah. I got to ask you about what's going on with Gavin Newsom. So this was like a couple months ago now. He was like doing that weird thing where he was pretending to be a moderate for a little bit.
Yeah.
He was going to see how
Charlie Kirk and all that.
Yes, he was doing all that. He was going to see how all that worked out. And he stopped that really quick. But during that period of time, he has this press conference where he's talking about, homelessness is a scourge. And I was out and I saw a baby and and he's acting like, it's disgusting what has been allowed to happen. You're familiar with the press conference I'm talking about, right?
Very.
How did you feel watching that?
Well, first of all, can I use profanity?
Yes.
That's all bullshit,
mm-hmm.
everything that he said. So let's just talk about facts. Here's the data, okay? Since Gavin Newsom has become governor of California, homelessness has increased in California by 31%. Since Gavin Newsom has become governor, he spent $30 billion on homelessness while homelessness has increased 31%. Since Gavin Newsom has become governor, we've had 40,000 overdose deaths in the state. Those are all statistical facts, period. Okay? So for him to sit there and say how disgusted he is and all of that, that's just all performative. That's just mm-hmm. all performance politics because the man is running for president.
Mm-hmm.
He's all but said it. This whole thing with the gerrymandering, that this is his big litmus test to get on the national stage, to stand up to Trump. It's because he wants to run for president in 2028. What I don't think he understands is that there's a lot of Democrats, and yes, I'm still a registered Democrat, that can't stand the guy. And we can't stand him, and we haven't been able to stand him since the beginning. And it's because he's one of those Marin County, north of San Francisco, Marin County rich elitist guys that's part of the political machine. It's like, we want real solutions. Even the young people that are like uber liberal, they're going after who they perceive to be a real person, like mm-hmm. Zohran Mamdani in New York. Yeah, he's a socialist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's anti-Jew. He is. All those things. But he appears real, and he's tapping into the people's, the populist anger around how expensive things are.
Yeah.
I wonder where he got that idea about tapping into people's anger about how hard things are in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump.
And the thing about Donald Trump, though, that I think Donald Trump is who he is.
Yep.
He is authentic, and you might hate him, but I guess I never question that he's behaving as he usually does. But when I see Gavin Newsom, there is not a more inauthentic person in politics. And I just wonder, when he has press conferences like that, does he know how dumb it sounds for him to act to distance himself from the homeless crisis? Does he have any self-awareness, I guess?
I think he knows the truth. I mean, the one thing about Newsom, he's not dumb. He's not a dumb guy. He's smart.
Mm.
But, I think he also panders to his base, right? Which is why he moved away from that podcasting.
Yeah.
Because he was pissing off his base, mm-hmm. right? So he interviewed Steve Bannon, didn't he? I mean, and that's like, that really made his base mad,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you have to understand, like in California, there's a real possibility that in 2 years we elect Katie Porter as our governor.
Oh God.
I mean, that to me, it would just be like, I might have to just move up here to Seattle at that point. Like, I'm just take my chances with you guys. I know. That's saying a lot, right? I might have to take my chances.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's all, with him, it's all a calculated risk. Everything he's doing is a calculated risk. But what I don't think he realizes is he's going to have a hard time relating to the working class, to the middle class, mm-hmm. out there in blue state, out there in like the blue wall states, right? The purple states, all that. Is he going to be able to relate? Because at the end of the day, a lot of people, including a lot of progressives, just kind of don't like the guy. So
he's not likable, Tom.
Well, he just comes off as arrogant.
He
right?
is arrogant.
Well, you know, and so that he, you know, I think he's going to have to reconcile that or reckon with it at some point. And again, a lot's going to hinge on whether or not this gerrymandering bill that's going to end up, we're going to have to vote on in November, actually passes or not. I don't know if it's going to pass. Like, yeah, we got a lot of progressives and stuff in our state, but there's also the reason progressives are so powerful in California is because all the independent voters in California, the vast majority of them vote Democrat. But they're independent because they don't like their constitution messed with.
Yep.
They don't like it when it feels like that you're usurping their rights.
Yeah.
Right? This could be one of those issues that mobilizes the independent vote in California to be like, I don't think so. So we'll see.
And I'm not of this belief. Like I had Anna Kasparian on the show not long ago. I think the last time we did Truth Tellers, and she's like predicting that California could go red in a few years. I'm not one of those people that thinks that is in the near future. Yeah. But it did show signs of movement in 2024. And so, you know, you're saying Katie Porter might be governor.
Please,
and,
no.
You know, I mean, but isn't that better than Kamala Harris? No? Is it worse?
Man. Wow.
You guys have a lot of killer options.
Man, we sure do. Yeah. Like, I would love to see, I'd probably get in trouble for saying this. I would love to see Matt Mahan, the mayor of San Jose, run for governor of California.
But he's not in the race, right?
He hasn't announced or anything like that, but I would love to see him because he's a moderate, pragmatic leader who's actually reduced homelessness in San Jose because he's embraced the idea of building shelters and tiny homes and only giving, you know, not tolerating RVs parked on the street anymore. Yeah. He's cleaning them up, you know, and nobody knows who he is outside of the Bay Area, but people should because that's the kind of leadership that we need in California that's actually going to point to and focus on the things that are the most problematic for our state, which is homelessness, drugs, getting businesses to come back to our state, reducing regulations around housing, all of those things. Like our state is, it's like Washington. We're so overregulated that we can't do anything. Yeah. Like we have our high-speed rail project, right? It's literally the train to nowhere, you know? And it's become just a jobs program for the unions, which is crazy.
Well, it's kind of indicative of just a lot of West Coast policies is a lot of money for nothing.
Right. Where are the results? And I think that people, that's part of why I think Trump got elected, is that people were looking around and seeing a lot of this wasteful spending happening and not seeing a lot of results. And on top of that, it's $6 for a loaf of bread at Safeway.
Yeah.
So I'd be mad too. And I was mad. I'm not going to tell you how I voted, but I was mad.
Yeah.
When I went to vote in November.
One issue, because you've been there, done that, that I wanted to ask you about on the homeless drug addiction front that Trump has talked about is the need for involuntary commitments.
Yep.
And whenever you get into the government deciding if they're going to take someone's, you know, liberty away, I always get a little touchy on it. But do you think it's time that we start involuntarily committing the people who are dying on our streets?
So, great question. But the answer is a little more nuanced than just should we take away people's rights and and put them in voluntary treatment if they're on the street. If you're on the street using drugs, you're breaking the law. I just want to preface that. Okay. If you're on the street and you're addicted to drugs, you're breaking the law every single day because you're having to hustle to get your money to buy drugs. What does that mean? Shoplifting, hustling, you know, stealing, breaking into someone's car, stealing someone's backpack, right? And then the act of actually smoking drugs out in the open is against the law.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're not talking about just, hey, we're going to go to a rave or go to a party and round up a bunch of people that are using drugs and throw you in treatment. This is about the people that are suffering at such a level on the street and are so desperate that they will steal, they will commit violent acts, et cetera, to maintain or support their addiction that they have to be intervened upon and held accountable. I'll tell you just one quick example of this to give you perspective. There's a guy on the street in San Francisco. His name is Sam. Okay. He's been housed like five different times already. And all five times he's either left his housing or been evicted because he's addicted to crack, addicted to heroin and now fentanyl, and he's schizophrenic. So he's got all these things working against him. And on top of all that, he has necrosis on both of his legs from shooting up in his legs so much that he had abscesses and now his flesh is rotting off his body. So if you get within 10 feet of him, it smells. It smells like death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so every once in a while, the street medicine team will come by and bandage him up. They'll take him to UCSF at the hospital, bandage him up. And then a couple days later, he's back out on the street. Ugh. Do you think that that man should be left on the street to die, or should he be intervened upon and put into mandated treatment, mandatory treatment, whether that be psych treatment or drug treatment or both, right? Those are the populations that we're mostly talking about here, the people that are so severely disabled. Well, he can still talk to you. So this is the thing with the involuntary commitment right now. If you want to, they call it a 5150 in California. I don't know if they call it that here, but anyway, if you go to somebody and say, hey, you know, are you okay? If they can answer your questions, do you want to go to the hospital? No. Are you okay? Yes. Even though you're like bleeding out, you know, kind of sort of have to leave you alone. Those are the rules that need to change so that we can make that determination a little quicker and get those people off the street and get them the help they need. So to answer your question, no, we don't want to just violate people's rights. But there's a but. The but is, yes, we do want to intervene in situations where people are so desperately sick from addiction or mental illness or a combination of both, plus all these other comorbidities that they have, that we should be able to intervene and offer them help.
Yeah, it seems like that's the area where, you know, do we have the infrastructure for that? I mean, we already have invols. We have involuntary holds if you're a threat to yourself or others. They just don't apply it really to people who are, I mean, they'll bring someone back to life with Narcan. I've literally been there where police brought someone back to life with Narcan. They're put in an ambulance and 5 seconds later, they just walk out of the ambulance because they can't make them go to the hospital. It's like, how is that person not a threat to themselves?
That's what I was going to say.
They were dead, essentially. When I came up on this specific guy, I was sure he was dead.
Right.
And that they were just, it was futile to give him Narcan. But no, put him in the ambulance and all of a sudden he's busting out of the ambulance and he's just walking down the street. And I just can't. In what world is that not a threat to yourself?
Well, that's what doesn't make any sense.
Right.
We're willing to intervene with Narcan to save someone's life.
Right.
But if you really want to save their life, you need to help them get off the street.
Yeah.
Because the longer they stay on the street and the longer they continue to use fentanyl, it's not even a maybe. They're going to die like way sooner than they should have as a result of their addiction. The fentanyl is going to get them sooner or later, or just being out on the street with the violence that's on the street. It's going to get them sooner or later. And this is the thing that I don't understand with the harm reductionists. They're willing to Narcan you 50 times. That's intervention.
Right.
That is a medical intervention.
You're putting a drug into someone's nostrils without their consent.
Correct. You are correct.
You know.
But they're not willing to take it any further than that. And I don't understand the mentality behind that, other than it's a, you know, this is where Michael Schellenberger and I align. It's like, this is a nihilistic view.
Yeah.
Right. And it's extremely damaging.
Yeah.
If you keep overdosing, what happens? You get hypoxia in your brain because you've stopped breathing and you get brain damage. So now we've got brain damaged drug addicted people on the street. You know, it's amazing. I didn't get, you know, it's amazing that some, yet with all of that, some of us can come out of it and not be, right? So I think that that's the other thing to focus on, is focus on people like me, Jenny Burton, Grant Denton, people that have gotten clean and sober, that had been down to those depths. I mean, I was dumpster diving in 2018 too.
It's just crazy to think of you.
Right. I was that guy. I'm not even lying. I got the scars on my arms to prove it from all the shooting up that I did. And but we can recover. We can come back. So why don't we put a little faith in these folks on the street and give them that chance? I just don't understand why our politicians have bought into this madness. Because harm reduction, the way it's being interpreted in Seattle, is radical.
Yes.
It's a radicalized version, and it's just going to end up killing people. And no one's going to get better. And they're going to have wasted $500 million. And they're going to all be scratching their heads. Why? And at the end, me and Andrea and you and some of us, we're all going to be standing there saying, I told you so. Are you ready to listen? And maybe by then they'll be ready to listen.
Well, I hope so. I'm glad you're also going to get involved in Seattle and what's going on. And man, you know, hearing a little bit about San Francisco gives me hope. I know there's a lot to dig themselves out of, but you know, I'd love to, like, I don't know, want to visit San Francisco one day again. You know,
I haven't
been there in many years, but I would love for that to be a place again that people want to go. And the same with Seattle and Portland. Seattle and Portland will have the biggest decline in tourism numbers of any city in the nation this year.
And the left blames it on Donald Trump being mean to Canada. And I just thought, you guys, you have to be realistic with yourselves. Well, Tom, you're just great. And we hardly even know each other, but I'm so proud of you. I see all the stuff that you're putting out, and I'm just like, that guy is doing something meaningful with his life.
Thank you.
So you're awesome.
Thanks, Brandy.
I just love Tom. I really do. I've just gotten to know him over the last year or so, and it's just astonishing what he's been able to do with his life and come back from, and it shows that it's possible. But yes, it does take tough love. And yes, it does take actually enforcing the laws that are on the books. And no, it's not a problem that can be solved by just putting everyone in a house. It is a drug crisis. It's a mental health crisis. And we could use a million Tom Wolfs across the country trying to get that message through to elected leaders in these blue cities that are dealing with these profound crises that they just simply do not want to handle in a meaningful way. So we are happy to celebrate Tom as a truth teller. Our next episode of Truth Tellers is a subscriber episode only. And I have to say, of all the interviews we did for this edition of Truth Tellers, this series, this might have been my favorite, and it was totally unexpected for me. So we'll be featuring John Popola. John is the host of Dad Saves America. He is first and foremost a father. He's a filmmaker, an entrepreneur, worked a long time in television production. And his show is really about looking at the issues facing our communities and our country through the lens of fatherhood. And as a woman who's not a mother, I thought, well, you know, I love some of the stuff he talks about, but am I going to be able to relate from him? And I learned so much about myself as a woman in this world through the lens of what boys and men are going through. And I gotta say, I was just so fascinated by John's take on so many things. So we're gonna celebrate John Popola as an important truth teller coming up this Sunday. It will be a subscriber only episode, so you can watch it by becoming a subscriber if you're not already. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show.